VOA, the science edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome to the science edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. March is officially Women's History Month in the United States. It's an annual occasion that honors the many contributions made by women, and it celebrates the achievements that women in a variety of fields have made throughout American history. This month-long event traces its start to 1981, when the U.S. Congress passed a public law that requested the president proclaim Women's History Week beginning on March 7, 1982. In the years since, the week-long celebration was expanded to a month that also incorporated International Women's Day, which is marked each March 8th. On today's Science Edition of Press Conference USA, we'll help close out Women's History Month with a discussion on the many contributions women scientists have made throughout the years. My guest for today's program is Rachel Ignatovsky, author, illustrator, and designer. Among the books she has written is 2016's Women in Science, 50 Fearless Pioneers Who Changed the World, which focuses on the contributions of 50 prominent women in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Rachel, after researching, writing, and gaining insight from your book, why do you think it's important to encourage women to pursue studies and careers in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics?
Well, our world faces lots of different problems, and women make up 50% of our population. That's brain power that we cannot afford to ignore. The great thing about problem solving in the sciences is that you need to come at it from lots of different angles. So having a diverse group of people with different backgrounds tackling those problems just means that we're going to come up with better solutions. Women have been contributing to science since the dawn of time, basically. But unfortunately, they haven't gotten the credit they deserve. Mm-hmm. And the only way for us to break down harmful stereotypes about women is to tell previously untold stories that are all true from history about women who have changed our world through their pursuit of science.
What can women offer in the various fields of science, especially qualities that men can't offer?
I don't think it's a matter of what someone can or cannot offer. I think each individual brings their own unique perspective to something. But when women are in the workforce, whether it's science or even the government, they can put their own unique experiences into the forefront. So issues that are really important for women, whether it's gynecology, female anatomy, family issues, all of that, when it's tackled by women, comes from a different perspective. That being said, the women in this book have done everything from discover nuclear fission to exploring deep space and discovering new types of galaxies and stars to creating new types of cancer research. So it's not really about the differences that men and women have. It's the fact that women have not been given the same opportunities as men and have been able to, despite all of that, persevere and fight against sexism to achieve their goals.
I know we're going to talk about some of the women you wrote about in your book a little later, but let me ask you this. What prompted you? What inspired you to write this book?
Well, growing up, I wasn't taught that much about women's history. And sure, there was like stories about Marie Curie out there, but I thought that she was the only female scientist. And as I was researching this book, I was overwhelmed by the sheer amount of women who have contributed just as much as Einstein and Tesla and Stephen Hawking, but for some reason, we don't know their stories and they're not pop culture icons. And I wanted to create a resource for teachers to be able to talk about these women in schools, have a book that's a reference point so that students growing up can grow up with a new normal where it wasn't this one exceptional woman in the room who did science, where women were a part of the history, and it was normal to see women in STEM.
What is your intended target audience for this book? Who are you trying to reach?
So this book is written at an eighth grade level, and I wrote it with the intention for teachers in school to use in their classrooms. Eighth grade is also the level that the news is written in the United States, because that's the reading level that can age up to adults and also age down even as low as elementary school. So it really reached everyone. And I'm really excited to say that this book is being used all over the world. It has been translated into 25 different languages and being used in classrooms to help with science and history. And it's also being read by professionals in the science fields. Like, I get emails from chemists, and I've even got an email from some of the women that were featured in this book saying how much they've enjoyed learning about other women in different fields and how they like to share this book with their colleagues. So it's been really exciting to see how well received it's been.
Going to hit on the gender thing again, why do you think this book is not only important to women, but men as well?
We want our young boys to grow up with a respect for women. And the only way that they're going to do that is by learning about strong female role models. I grew up with a ton of role models that were both men and women. And, you know, there was a lot of men that I wanted to aspire to be like. Like, I thought as an artist, I was like, there was comic book artists who are male who, like, I really aspired to be like. And I think when we finally break down gender barriers, if young boys can have female role models like Jane Goodall or Lisa Meitner or Mae Jemison, the astronaut, that they want to aspire to be like, that's when we have truly broken down the barrier, the gender barriers, and finally have made it so that women are fully respected in the eyes of young boys and men.
Rachel, were you always interested in science? And if so, what roles did STEM subjects play in your life from an early age?
I grew up in a household with scientists. My dad, he has a master's in bioresearch. My mom was a computer programmer. You know, they ended up changing fields later on in life. But I grew up in a household where science was very, very important. And I took science classes that really interested me, like human anatomy and classes about, you know, botany and ecology. And even though I knew I was going to become an artist, science was always a main point of inspiration for my artwork. So I always said, oh, I'm either going to become a doctor or an artist. But, you know, when you're really good at drawing, you kind of can't give it up. I'm like, man, it's like I could either be a mediocre doctor or I could be an awesome artist. So I went the art route instead. And I'm very happy that I did, because now I get to do the work of science communication, which I think is very important.
In your book, you profile 50 women who have made significant contributions in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I'm curious, how and why did you select these 50 specific women to write about?
So in this book, we go all the way back to ancient Alexandria, to the first ever recorded female mathematician, Hypatia, all the way to modern day, to Miriam Mizrakhani, the first woman to win a Fields Medal, which is like the Nobel Prize in math. But we don't just talk about math. We talk about a whole slew of subjects, marine biology, genetics, astrophysics, we've got doctors, we have psychologists, chemists. And so that was one of the kind of things I wanted to hit upon when choosing this women for this book. I wanted to make sure that it was a range of history so that we moved through history. So we have women from basically like every single decade or important part of scientific history going all the way back. But I also wanted to have a wide range of subjects in the book, so you get to learn about all different kinds of fields of science. I also wanted to make sure the book was as diverse as possible. So I wanted women with different economic backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, from different races, from different countries, to make sure that there was a story in this book for everyone. So, you know, whether you relate to them on a personal level or you relate to them because, hey, I also love learning about rocks, so this awesome geologist really inspires me. There's something to connect kids to any one of the women in these books.
Rachel, were there any of your subjects that you are especially impressed with, and why?
I would have to say that one of my favorite women in this book was Sylvia Earle. She is nicknamed like her deepness, and because she is the first person to go as deep as she did in the ocean for her marine biology. And as I was learning about her, I was also just kind of learning about how important it is to protect our oceans through her documentary Mission Blue. And it was just really inspiring hearing about all the work that she did at NOAA and also how far she's come fighting for our planet. So that really impacted me and actually led me to write more books about ecology and earth science after that.
You mentioned this a little earlier, Rachel. A number of early prominent women scientists often worked in the shadows of famous male scientists. Can you give us some examples of the contributions made by some of these women who helped make extraordinary findings by male scientists possible?
One of the women that is a really great example of this is Lisa Meitner. So Lisa Meitner, with the help of her lab partner, Otto Hahn, discovered fission. And fission is what happens when you stretch a nucleus of an atom and actually split it and create nuclear energy. So this is a really big discovery, but she wasn't given full credit for her work. Otto Hahn actually won the Nobel Prize in it. And the story goes that when she began working, she was working in Germany during a time when it was actually illegal for women to attend university. But she was so smart that the universities in Berlin wanted her to do research for them anyway. So she actually worked in the basement of the university all by herself with no ventilation, no proper safety protocol, working on these really dangerous radiochemistry experiments. And she wasn't even allowed to use the bathroom in the building. They made her use the bathroom in the restaurant across the street. Finally, when the Prussian government allowed women to enter university, she began working with Otto Hahn out in the open. And together, they discovered many different types of atoms that appear on the periodic table. Fast forward into their career, they actually are in a race with other scientists to create a new atom. And to create a new atom, they were smashing neutrons against the nucleus of uranium. So they're smashing these neutrons against the nucleus of uranium, trying to create a new type of atom. And their results are really wonky, they're really strange, and they don't really understand what they mean. They didn't know it yet, but they were actually on the precipice of one of the greatest discoveries of all time. Then Hitler rose to power in Germany, and Lisa was Jewish. So the Holocaust was starting, and Lisa had to flee Germany for her life and became a refugee in Sweden. And while she was working in Sweden, she continued to write letters to Otto Hahn in secret at the risk of her own life to continue to work on their experiment. It was while she was in Sweden that she realized that the results weren't creating a new atom. They were actually stretching apart the nucleus of uranium. And she described it like stretching pizza dough. And they were creating more energy than what went into the experiment. They were creating nuclear energy. They were creating fission. So she writes back to Otto Hahn. He publishes. And because she could not return to Germany, and also because she was a woman, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for their experiment without her. And I just don't think that that's fair. And I think that even though people know her role now in the experiment, when we think of nuclear energy, we should think of Lisa Meitner, and she should become a household name, just like Einstein is.
Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Here's a reminder that Press Conference USA is available for free download from our website, voanews.com/PCUSA, and from many streaming services, such as Apple Podcasts. We also hope you get in touch with us either through Facebook or Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or by sending us an old-fashioned email to pcusa@voanews.com. Here's a shout-out to a loyal Facebook follower, Kenneth Terheman from Benue State in South Nigeria. If you want to hear your name and country mentioned on the air, just follow us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Now, back to the science edition of Press Conference USA. Today, in celebration of Women's History Month, we're discussing the many contributions women scientists have made throughout the years. My guest for today's program is Rachel Ignatovsky, author, illustrator, and designer. Among the books she has written is 2016's Women in Science, 50 Fearless Pioneers Who Changed the World, which focuses on the contributions of 50 prominent women in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Rachel, let's talk about some of the women you profile in your book. You placed 50 pioneering scientists in chronological order. So let's start with the beginning of your list, Hypatia. What can you tell us about her, and why is she listed first?
Well, she was listed first because she was the earliest person that I could find that had sufficient writing about her. So when researching this book, I had to find a ton of sources, and a lot of times it was very hard, especially when I wrote this, which was back in 2015. I would have to go through obituaries, or I would find out about people by reading about, sometimes I would read the biographies of male scientists, and I would find out about a person who they worked with closely, and then I would read more about them. So it was really a struggle to find sources about some of these women. And Hypatia is the first one because she was the earliest person that I could find with enough sources to tell a story about. And she worked in the Library of Alexandria. She is basically the first documented female mathematician. I'm sure there were women working before her, but again, it's all about the sources that we can find. And there was enough sufficient writing about her to be able to tell her story.
Tell us about Wang Sun-He.
Wang Sun-He was the earliest and most famous scientist in China that I could find who was a woman. And she was actually so famous that Marco Polo wrote things about her. And the exciting thing about her is that she was not only an astronomer and a mathematician, but she was also a poet. And she figured out in her room, using ropes and pulleys and lamps and mirrors, how eclipses actually work in the sky. And she figured that out in a time when people didn't really understand a lot about astronomy. So she's just a really interesting woman to learn about.
Ada Lovelace.
Oh, Ada Lovelace. She's considered the first computer programmer ever. So Ada Lovelace worked with Charles Babbage around 1843, created this large commentary on an article written about Charles Babbage's analytical engine. And it's considered one of the most important documents in computer history because it's the first time that someone wrote a computer program. So she wrote a hypothetical computer program for a hypothetical machine, but she also imagined that a mechanical calculator of sorts, given enough power and energy, could do things other than just crunch numbers, that she hypothesized that computers in the future would be able to compose music and do almost creative tasks. And as you know, that's completely true now. Yes. So the insight that she had all the way back then is just really, really remarkable. And the papers that she wrote on it were really influential later on for people like Alan Turing and Howard Aiken, especially, who created the Harvard Mark I, who he worked with another person in this book, Grace Hopper, another great computer programmer from science history. So it's really interesting when we talk about tech history, how far back women have always been involved in it. From the very beginning, even before computers were, when computers were just a dream, they were involved.
Speaking of Grace Hopper, what about the contribution she made?
Grace Hopper is pretty much considered the mother of computer programming. So if Ada Lovelace is the first computer programmer, Grace Hopper is the mother because she created one of the very first compilers. Now, a compiler is how we translate programming languages into binary that computers can understand. So computers can only understand ones and zeros, which is called machine code. And back when she was working, which was on the first generation of computers, the Harvard Mark I, the UNIVAC, which came a little later, people had to be basically have like a master's in mathematics to be able to write the programming languages in the complicated ones and zeros for the computers to understand back then. And she imagined a better way where we could talk to computers in English-like language and shorthand instead. So her work has been so important. And she broke the record for the oldest person to ever serve in the United States military. She retired from the Navy at the age of 80, wow. If you can imagine.
What about Rachel Carson and her impact of her book, Silent Spring?
Oh, Rachel Carson's amazing. So Rachel Carson was a huge inspiration for me personally because the work that she has done in the field of science communication, getting normal people who aren't really interested in science aware of a science issue like pollution. She did that through creating a book that was interesting for readers, which is something that I aspire to do. So Silent Spring is all about how DDT and pesticides were getting into the groundwater and destroying the ecosystems of the surrounding areas. And it starts with her noticing that all the birds were dying. So she researches this, writes a book about it, and that book becomes a sensation that public opinion begins to change. So that allows her to get in front of the United States Congress and petition that we need to have regulations to prevent pollution, basically, from runoff. And with her help and through this book, she creates the EPA, which regulates basically like factories and farming and all sorts of chemical use in America. So while she was doing it, she was actually also battling cancer. So she was in this long legal battle to protect our environment while she was also battling cancer at the same time. So she's just an incredibly strong woman, and her impact is still felt today, and we still benefit from it today.
Rachel, one of the movies I've seen recently that really impressed me was Hidden Figures. It was amazing. These three African-American women and what they did at NASA was absolutely groundbreaking. I'm talking about Mary Jackson, Katherine Johnson, and Dorothy Vaughan. And I know you have Katherine Johnson listed in your book, but can you share us what you have on Katherine Johnson? Because recently she had two NASA facilities named after her.
Oh, she's amazing. Also, I just want to say Hidden Figures was one of my favorite movies. When I went to go see it, there was a crowd of young girls in the audience, and every time one of the women on screen accomplished something, they would erupt in cheers and clapping. And you could tell that it was just really impacting them, seeing these women on screen. So Katherine Johnson, I actually started researching her before I even knew the book was coming out, just because she's just so amazing. She began working at NASA in a time in the United States during segregation, which meant that she worked on a segregated campus, which meant there was facilities that were only for African-Americans, and then there was facilities that were only for white people. And it's a big shame in the United States, our legacy of racism and segregation. It's something that we're still working to remedy today to some extent. While she was working there, she was a human computer. And so back then, sure, there were computers, but there were also human computers, which was rooms of women working together to solve mathematical problems by hand. And they would each do a part of the equation. Now, Katherine Johnson was a genius. And this work was kind of on par with secretarial work. She wanted to do more. So she goes to her supervisor. And this wasn't in the movie, but this is actually what happened in real life. And I learned that by watching an interview with her. She goes to her supervisor and she says, is it illegal for me to be in the room where you're having the meetings about getting the first American astronaut into space? And he goes, no, it's not illegal. And that's the kind of questions you have to ask when it is illegal for your body to be present in certain spaces in the United States. And she goes, well, then I'm going in. So she goes in, she begins asking questions, she begins really getting involved in this meeting, showing off her skills. And they're so impressed with her that they have her, they reassign her to be on the team that is calculating the launch window for the Mercury mission. As you could see in the movie, she did a job well done, and it was her calculations that allowed the flight to happen with success. And then this is kind of spoilers for what happens after the movie. Because of that success, she is made a lead in calculating trajectory at NASA. She leads the project that calculates the flight path for the Apollo mission, which is the first mission to the moon. Then she begins to work on tons of other projects at NASA. She helps to write the first textbook on space travel. She works on the space shuttle program. And she retires a job well done, super respected in her field. And as I was finishing this book in 2015, as I was drawing the very last illustration before it got sent to the printer, my editor goes, "Look at the news." And in 2015, she is awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Barack Obama. And so I quickly draw it in to make sure that that's a fact that's in the book. And think about that. She went from not being allowed to the room to fighting her way in to then becoming so important on these projects to get the first astronauts to space that she's awarded the highest civilian honor you can get in the United States, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So her story is just so inspiring, and I'm so excited that she's becoming a household name. And this is how you do it. You do it through pop culture. You do it through movies, cartoons, documentaries. Now she's a role model for all these young women. And I'm just so excited that she's also in my book, and that there's more books and even more movies coming out about her.
What amazed me about her role in NASA was the part where John Glenn refused to go into the space capsule until calculations were done by her.
Oh, you know what's really cool is that when they got they kind of had access to computers a little bit, but when NASA started getting computers in the building, they used Katherine Johnson as the test to see if those mechanical computers were actually doing their job correctly. They're like, if it matches Katherine's numbers, that means these computers are okay.
Rachel Ignatovsky, thank you so much for joining us today and bringing us up to date with some of the female heroes in science.
Oh, thank you very much. And I just want to say that this book has been such an honor for me to write. And it's actually part of a larger series where I talk about women in art and women in sports, because women can do anything no matter what they put their mind to. And it's just amazing to be able to talk about the impact that they've had in all these different fields.
That was Rachel Ignatovsky, author, illustrator, and designer. Among the books she has written is 2016's Women in Science, 50 Fearless Pioneers Who Changed the World, which focuses on the contributions of 50 prominent women to the fields of science, technology, and mathematics. She joined us today via Skype. You can learn more about Rachel and her books at her website, rachelignatovskydesign.com. Spelled out, that's Rachel, Ignotovsky, design, all in one word, .com. And that's all the time we have for this science edition of Press Conference USA. I'd like to thank you so much for listening to our program today. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.